Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Sanacori Taino, straight out of Lenni Lenape territory, New York City. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This is September 27th, 2020. Muchas gracias, Tagüey, Tao, Guatiao. Hello, friends. Thank you for being here. This is Guasabara Radio Taino. Taino Radio, thank you for tuning in. And today in Haiti, it's sunny, 91 degrees for all you brothers and sisters out there in Haiti. I know it's warm out there. In Cuba, check it out, it's 89 degrees. It's some heavy rains today over there, though, so be well. Also in Borinque, my home island of Puerto Rico, 94 degrees with patchy rain, so it's pretty hot out there today. In Bahamas, one of the first islands that encounter a super invasion, it's cloudy at 89 degrees. Whoa, 89. And cloudy. I see Bonayez out there hanging out in Bahamas. Okay, Dominican Republic, known as Quisqueya/Haiti, 92 degrees and very sunny. And I can tell you right now, it's hot. Also, Jamaica, Jamaica, 84 degrees, and they're getting a lot of rain today. They're getting a fertilizing rain. Hopefully, Coacristie and Guatauba are friendly. No floods or anything like that. So I'd like to thank you all once again. Oh, also, another island from the Calinabo people, our brothers and sisters, the Calinabo, who the Spaniards call the Caribs. They are the Dominica, the Calinago, 88 degrees, and they're also receiving rain and thunder. Guatauba is out there hanging out in Dominica, Calinago territory. You know, I got some emails, different topics, but I got several emails from several people who wanted to know more about or revisit what happened in Saona Island. And Saona Island is a small island. Is the coastline is basically 29.2 miles. The length is, we'll say, 15 miles. The highest elevation is 115 feet. It's a small island off the northeast region of Quisqueya, or Dominican Republic. And I was doing some research on the island, and it's amazing. I'm sorry, not northeast, the southeast region, right in the tip of the Dominican Republic, directly facing Higüey. And Higüey is in the district of Altagracia in the Dominican Republic. It's the eighth largest city in the Dominican Republic, and that's Higüey. But check this out. Saona Island, very, very interesting island. I mentioned this several times on shows when I talked about El Cacique Guatubanama and also La Cacica Aguanama, and a lot of stuff happened in that island that kind of set forth the chain of events that will occur of the invasion in 1503. So I started doing some research on the island. It seems like at first, I thought it would be a Taino word, Saona, but it actually is not a Taino word. The infamous Christopher Columbus, the assassin and murderer, genocidal maniac, he actually honored his friend Michel de Cuneo, and his friend lived in Savona. In Savona, this is why we have this name of Sanaona Island. So I looked into some of the, you know, archives, the language. I looked at the YU, which is the largest language, Arawak language spoken in South America and the Caribbean region. And I came up, you know, I saw photos of the island, which is very, very beautiful. There's daily adventures there for motorboats and, you know, organized trips to the Sauna Islands from the people of Santo Domingo, Haiti, and also throughout Europe and the world. A lot of film industry people, when they look for a deserted island, that's what they look for. And a lot of films have been filmed at Sauna Island. It's very, very beautiful. I like to call it the peaceful island. The beaches look wonderful. So I went into the YU, Nataino, and I came up with a word called Ana Hososhi, which means the peaceful island. Okay. Now, in 1503, this Sauna Island came to the historical documents as an island of that experienced bloodshed. And it's so sad. It's very, very traumatic. And this is part of our traumatic history as the descendants of the Taino and those who identify as Taino. This is part of the anger we have to deal with, you know, when we look at the history. And Sauna Island is, I think, for us, we should really look at it as a healing process, you know, learning from this and continuing on. So there was a cacique, and his name is unknown. We don't know what his name is. It wasn't documented, but it seems that this man was a very peaceful leader. He wanted peace at all costs, it seems. So in the island of Sauna, he had yucayeques, which were dedicated to growing cassava. And so his conuco, his garden, was cassava, and he made cassava bread for the Spaniards. So he supplied cassava bread to Santo Domingo district at the time, the first colony there, the city, I should say, the, you know, the town. And guess what? He fed the Spaniards for free. I guess his intent was to avoid war, to avoid battles, confrontation. So let's feed the enemy. Let's keep them quiet. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I've been praying over. This unknown cacique, this peaceful cacique. So there was a peace, there was a peace agreement between the Spaniards and Santo Domingo and this cacique in Sauna Island, in which they will supply endless amounts of cassava bread to the Spanish. In return, there will be peace. There will be no issues. But then one day, there was an attack in Sauna Island against this cacique. Now, the Spaniards, they had these war dogs that they would use against rebel natives. And what happened was the Mastiff dog, it's trained to attack and to devour the enemy. You know, it's kind of sad. It's tragic. It's almost like creating a dog that's like a war machine. So according to this, according to Bartolomé de las Casas, in his Complete History of the Indies, in his book 2, he talks about this attack, this Mastiff attack, and he called it a senseless, cruel attack on this cacique who was a peaceful man, okay? And according to Bartolomé de las Casas, who was a Dominican friar, not that he was Dominican, but is the Order of St. Dominic. He was a Spaniard who dedicated his later life into writing about what he learned, what he experienced when he was a younger friar, priest, eventually became the Bishop of Chiapas, Mexico. And before his death, he tried to write as much as he could about the Taino people. And he remembers this unknown chief. And he said that the dog just devoured his abdomen and ripped out his intestines and his organs. And he says that the dog was witness having the intestines in his mouth, ripping it open from his guts. Now, I'm very graphic with this because I want people to understand what our ancestors went through. There was no law and order, even though there was a royal decree by the Spanish crown stating that the during the Hinojosa system, where, you know, glorified slavery, the natives, the Taino, as a labor force, will not be mistreated. But of course, the brutal, those brutal administrators at the time, and very first wave, they just did not care about any royal decree. And they just, you know, this poor guy, this poor chief, he was devoured. According to the story, you know, he grabbed his animate abdomen and he tried to, you know, I guess instinctually try to survive, but he died. So at this time, I just want to take a pause here. I just want people to digest that scene, you know. And if anybody wants to call in live, you can. If you have any questions, want to add something, maybe you are from the Dominican Republic. Phone number is 515-602-9792. 515-602-9792. And yeah, this is a very destructive act that was done against a peaceful man, a peaceful chief that we don't even know his name. Now, when the attack against this man, unknown chief, was heard, Aguanama, which was a chieftess, and according to Bartolomé de las Casas, he viewed her as like the queen of all the caciques. She was like the head, the Guamiquina. She was the head one, the principal chieftess. And basically, according to Madame de las Casas, she was the one that made the call to seek revenge. And the person that she chose for this revenge, and there's some question, did she choose him or the cacique Guatu Banama, who was from Higüey, who was, according to the Spanish, he was a superior chief when it came to military and war tactics. So there's really some confusion. But the Bartolomé de las Casas, according to his writings, you know, you can interpret it as, yes, it was Igua. It was Iguanama that told him to do this, the revenge. But either way, revenge did take place. The first battle of 1503. There was a caravan that was ordered by the lieutenant governor at the time. His name was Nicolás de Ovando. He sent El Capitán. Hold on a second. I'm looking at my notes here. Hold on a second. I'm trying to get the captain's name. He was actually a man who was sent to Saona to get some shipment of supplies, food, and then they were going to go to the region called Puerto Plata, in which he was, you know, they were going to expand their colonies. So basically, this captain and eight soldiers were killed. It was part of the revenge that took place in Saona Island. And it was, and you can imagine, the lieutenant governor at the time, Ovando, he was very, very upset what happened. So what he happened was he tried, well, not that he tried, he ordered an attack against Cacique Guatubanama and the freedom fighters. Now, according to Bartolomé de las Casas, he basically thinks that this attack against the cacique, this unknown cacique, was intentional to incite revenge from the native population, Taino, in which could actually enforce la guerra justa, the just war theory, in which they can absolutely enslave the native population with no recourse from the royal king and queen. And that was his theory. That was his writings. And I think that was it. You know, let's incite a riot, you know, and let's get some martial law into effect. And let's just take over. You know, using modern language, I'm using now. But basically, after this first battle, the war began. And there we have Ovando, Lieutenant Governor, gathered 300 troops. Okay, to go against Cacique Guatumanama. Okay, so these 300 troops also had over 100 Taino or Native American warriors, okay, on the side of the Spanish. So, as you can imagine, this was not good. There were also horses were used tremendously in these battles, and it was a great advantage for the Spaniards. And of course, their rifles, their guns. But they use a campaign called a cabalgadas. Cabalgadas, okay? And these were the horse raids. Basically, they were hunting down natives. You know, I just want to take a pause here. When I was in living in Corozal this past fall of 2019, and in my trip a year ago to Puerto Rico, there were these events that occur on the mountainside called cabalgadas, in which, you know, people go on their horses and they will go on the highways, go on the mountaintop in bunches, you know, the cabalgadas. And this is, you know, echoing the tradition of hunting for natives, hunting for Indians. And at the time I said, oh my God, this is horrible. How can modern people celebrate this? This is just horrible. So then what happened when I read the story of Saona Island and what the Spanish did with these horses, it was just horrible. So basically, 300 troops, it was led by Juan Esquivel. And Juan Esquivel was the future invader of Jamaica. Okay? And part of his lieutenants, one of his lieutenants was Ponce de Leon. And Ponce de Leon, you know, because of these battles and his increased power, increased his wealth, and eventually he invaded Borinquen and Puerto Rico. So this is like the who's who of invaders here, you know. So a lot of, it was like 600 to 700 Native American Taino were escaped to the caves in Saona. I was trying to look online and see if we get the photos. I'll try to download that in Facebook, Masabra Taino Radio. But they say that there's cave art, petroglyphs in those caves. Unfortunately, those that escaped were caught. You know, thanks to the cabalgadas, and also probably because of the natives that were part of this invasion. Most were captured, and they were brought to these houses in the island. They were called slaughterhouses, okay? And there, according to Botema de Casas, the captured freedom fighters, women and children as well, were hacked. They were cut. They were mutilated, amputated, on feet and hands and arms. And, of course, beheadings took place in these slaughterhouses. And Juan Esquivel demanded a count, seeing how many natives they, you know, they found. This is probably why we have this number, 600 to 700 were captured. And many of them were hung as well. They were disemboweled. And there was even, Del Casas even talks about Spaniards will take their swords, and they had like a contest, who can slice a person in half, you know, head down. So you could just imagine this slaughter that took place. You know, all because an innocent cacique who gave food, you know, to the enemy, to the invader, was brutally attacked by these war dogs, the La Casas believes it was all a setup so they can negate the royal decree of protection of the natives, and they can enslave them, make them a property, and do whatever they want. So Cacique Guatubanamá, he did sort revenge, but eventually they were outnumbered, and he did surrender. Okay, he did surrender, and the demand of the surrender was they were going to supply food to the Spaniards. So they did the same thing that this unknown cacique did. You know, they supplied the Spaniards with food. In return, they would be left alone. And that's just unfortunate. I found in my notes, Captain Martin de Villamán, he was the one, and his nine soldiers, he was the one that was eventually killed. And it's just, you know, when you read this history, the brutality that took place was just incredible. So what happened was, after Capitán Martín was killed, I'm just going to share the timeline. So this Omar Cacique was killed, okay? It was in a, you know, Guatubanamá definitely fought back, and it was a surrender, okay? They supply more food for the Spanish, and then Captain Martin de Villamán and five soldiers were left in Higüey, and what happened there was they were... I was reading through the sources, but then like Casas, pretty much, you know, there was rumors that the women were raped. There were a lot of indigenous women raped by these soldiers, and this is what ended the peace treaty. And then a second battle ensued. So this Captain Martin and his mine men were killed at a fort called San Rafael del Yuma, and this is all in Higüey. The Altagracia district, present day now. So the second battle, you know, again, the brutality of the natives, the brutality of the Spaniards against the natives. This time it was raping of the women. Unfortunately, you know, well, before I say that, Guatubanamá did a great job in taking down the fortress, taking down, you know, the Spanish, he burned everything. But there was one Spaniard that escaped, okay? And in 1504, once again, the troops came in, villages were attacked, and it was a total chaos, okay? Total chaos. So once again, during this time period, 1503, from the death of this unknown cacique, to 1504, we have the Guerra Justa, the legal recourse of the Spanish saying, hey, you know, they attacked us, we're going to enslave them. Of course, there was no respect for the royal decrees to protect the natives. So the repartimiento system, which kind of legalized the Indian slavery with limited protections, now we're just like straight out, this is our property, we can do anything we want, you know. Eventually, Cacique Guatubanamá was captured and he was killed, unfortunately. And according to Bataola Casas, he was a superior fighter. He was bigger than most men, very muscular, very tall. And the Spanish even had tremendous respect for him, okay? Because of his, I guess, his strategies in the battlefields. So here we are. In summary, we have a violent invader that cannot be trusted, okay? And when there is a peace agreement or treaty, it's going to be broken by these invaders. And this is what happened with this unknown chief. And then what happened was there was revenge. But because we were outnumbered due to military might from the Spanish, these battles were lost. And even though Cacique Guatubanamá was superior compared to most of the other caciques, when it came to military, it just was not enough, and he was killed. And once again, this is our history. We fought back. Physically, we fought back, but also intellectually, we fought back. Juan Esquivel, after the first battle, he initiated the Guatiao ceremony, which is the naming ceremony in which names are exchanged. Names are sacred. Names were exchanged. My theory is that the Spaniards probably used this to finally humiliate the ancestors, the Taino, saying, hey, not only did you lose, we're going to take your name. So Juan became Cacique Guatubanama, which led the Naboria society people, you know, the common people, to follow this Juan Esquivel and to lead injury to insult. Oh, insult to injury. What happened? Cacique Guatubana became Juan Esquivel in his name. And I don't know about you, but that name Juan Esquivel is not a good name to have. So that's my theory. When Juan initiated the Guatiao ceremony, it was insult to injury. And this is just horrible. But we tried our best. We did what we could. We fought back. It was very valiant. But then, this is the lesson in history. You know, does war solve all our problems? Does violence solve all our problems? And what can we do? So there was a new strategy needed to be taken, a new strategy. Now, in 1511, in Borinquen in Puerto Rico, there was also another rebellion that took place. And we're going to talk about that in future shows. But I want you all to think about this and reflect over this. You know, the war effort against the Spaniards, was it enough? Or was it a bad strategy, I should say? Was it a bad strategy? Could we have avoided deaths if we didn't fight and negotiate it more? It's one of the several questions that people have asked me through the years. And also, maybe we should have been more ferocious, more organized as a people to go against the Spanish. I know, according to the history books, the La Casa writes about it, you know, the Carinago did join forces after centuries of war, into tribal wars. But you read constantly about these natives joining forces with the Spaniards, caciques joining forces with the Spaniards. And that famous prophecy of Caicedo, who said the end of the caciques was upon us. So right before us, we're seeing the destruction, or is it the corruption of the caciques? You know, there's a lot of questions to be asked. In future shows, I want to have people, I'm trying to set up a panel to see, you know, where's our loss? Because we were greater in numbers when it came to people against the Spaniards. But the division among our caciques, or was it Columbus, Juan, Ponce de Leon, was it their tactic to divide and conquer? So there's a lot of questions to ask, a lot of questions that Guasabara Taino Radio is not afraid to ask. But we really have to look at these. We really have to ask the question, why? Because going forward, those who are identifying as Taino, you know, we have to learn from the past. We just have to accept certain truths and continue on. Heal from the trauma. And part of that trauma is that there were caciques that fought hard, and there were caciques that went with the Spanish. And we're going to ask those questions, why? So today I just wanted you to think about the unknown cacique who did not want to fight. He just peacefully, with his village, his Yucayeque, created and grew cassava to make the cassava bread. So I leave you a lot of thoughts, a lot of questions, maybe a lot of anger. But hang in there, everyone. Healing is coming. We'll be right back. on Facebook, and also tune in as best as you can. We bring it on. We're bringing in the great shows. Thank you so much. And remember, go on Facebook. I'll go on the website of TainoSpidey.web.com for also exciting information about the show. Take care.